my name's Ann. I'm an addict. We don't have a real amplifier or anything, so I'm going to yell as long as I can. This thing's just picking up for a tape. What I want to do is read from the Just for Today. It'll kind of calm my nerves and give us something spiritual to talk about, maybe. Let's see what we got going on here. Today's the 17th?
Yes.
Okay. April 17th, priority, meetings. I initially felt that it would be impossible to attend more than one or two meetings a week. It just wouldn't fit in with my busy schedule. I later learned that my priorities were 180 degrees reversed. It was everything else that would have to fit into my meeting schedule. Basic text, page 204. Some of us attended meetings infrequently when we first came into Narcotics Anonymous, then wondered why we couldn't stay clean. What we soon learned was that if we wanted to stay clean, we had to make meeting attendance our priority. So we began again. Following our sponsor's suggestion, we made a commitment to attend 90 meetings in 90 days. We identified ourselves as newcomers for our first 30 days so that others could get to know us. At our sponsor's direction, we stopped talking long enough to learn to listen. We soon began to look forward to the meetings, and we began to stay clean. Today, we attend meetings for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we go to meetings to share our experience, strength, and hope with newer members. Sometimes we go to see our friends. And sometimes we go just because we need a hug. Occasionally, we leave a meeting and realize we haven't heard a word that's been said, but we still feel better. The atmosphere of love and joy that fills our meetings has kept us clean another day. No matter how hectic our schedule, we make meeting attendance our priority. Just for today, in my heart, I know that meetings benefit me in all kinds of ways. Today, I want what's good for me. I will attend a meeting. And I guess at the convention, we've all attended a lot of meetings in the last couple days, so that's pretty good. Can y'all hear me?
No.
Oh, well, shoot.
Move in, if you can. There's room over here.
Can I move this thing? Can you move it over here more? Sorry. Okay, why don't y'all try to get closer and I'll try to get closer to you. How far are we going to go? Let's get cozy! Okay. So anyways, the topic in the Just for Today was about meetings. And, when I first came into recovery, a lot of people, I've been hearing a lot lately, and this is okay too, but a lot of people are saying that everybody that they know that's got substantial clean time went to a meeting almost every day for like 5 years. And I caught this resentment when I heard that because I didn't do that, but I've been able to stay clean. But my story is when I came into recovery, I had two little kids, and I was a single mom. And they had things going on in their lives too, like scouts and wrestling and things like that. And I started back to college. And so my evenings were rather full with the responsibilities of my kids and stuff. So I went to meetings basically like every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I continue to do that today. I keep weekend meetings my priority. And I'm still going to school, so that keeps happening. But what I did, I learned how to be creative because I felt like I was missing out because all these other, I was actually jealous of people that talked about going to meetings all the time and I couldn't always be there. And so I learned how to be creative in my recovery on what I could be doing for myself and my program and the fellowship. And I got involved in service work. And I learned I could do a lot of service work from home, like the helpline, taking them phone calls. So I was the Wednesday night girls for Central Maryland's helpline for about 4 years, and that was pretty cool. And I got to reach out to addicts when I was at home. And I was a treasurer, so I went to area service once a month, and I brought home all that money. And me and my kids would count that money at home. And I helped them learn how to divide nickels, dimes, and quarters, and they thought that was pretty cool. And so I learned how to do a lot of stuff at home, and now that I'm thinking about it, even today I do a lot of service work from my house. I'm the regional webmaster for CMP Region, and I do the web page, and I do all kinds of really cool stuff on the internet, and I have a really good time with it, and I'm basically by myself most of the time. I answer a lot of emails from people visiting Washington, D.C. area, wanting to know about, you know, help for their mother, father, sister, brother, cousin kind of thing. And it's really pretty cool that I know I can touch people and help them get to meetings and everything like that. And I'm just sitting on my ass on my computer at home. And it's really pretty cool because I felt like I was missing out, you know, at first, not getting to enough meetings. And I found what my type of service work has been very rewarding for me. And I know I'm touching a lot of people's lives and doing it. And I feel really pretty good about that. I've really felt that service is the major part of the reason why I've stayed clean. And I enjoy doing service work. I'm involved in public information. We have a PI booth out there at the lobby or whatever you want to call it. And I found I really, really enjoy speaking in front of the public. I've spoken at high schools. We've done a lot of different engagements with school teachers and just carrying the message that Narcotics Anonymous exists to the public. And we've done NA booths at psychiatric conventions and health fairs at the colleges, and it's just been really, really cool experience getting involved in that respect. And I've enjoyed it. Now, getting to the topic, the meetings, I mean, they talk about meetings, going to meetings regularly, and for me, regularly is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I go to meetings every weekend. If I don't make it to my home group, it's really nice when people sit there and say they missed me, you know? And I'm involved in my home group. It's, to me, the best home group in the world. It's Saturday night, Fresh Start, Shady Grove Hospital in Rockville, Maryland. And it's a really cool meeting. I love it. Got a lot of people there. I mean, sometimes I think we have about 100 people at that meeting. And being at that meeting, I try to be of service there. I eyeball people that look like they're new, somebody I don't recognize. And I ask them if they've been coming around for a while, you know, and I direct them to the table with the literature. And the reason why I do that was when I was new, I gave y'all about 10 seconds to come up to me after the end of that meeting. And if y'all didn't come up to me after the end of that meeting, I hated y'all. Y'all just stuck to your cliques. You were too damn happy. And I was out the door. I gave you 10 seconds, and there were sometimes I went out the door and I got high. I was relapsing at one point, and I was like, F all y'all, and I'm gone, and I got high. And so today, I make it a point to look at those newcomers, those people that really look a little scared being here. You know, you can tell the people that have been around a while, they look generally happy. They seem to know a few people. But there are those people that got that look in their eye, and I just know that they haven't been coming around that long. And I'm really afraid that they're going to go out in their car like I did and go get high because they feel like they're still alone. But see, I wasn't giving this program a chance when I did what I did. And I do remember the first time somebody asked me out to go out with the group after the meeting. It took me a long time to just invite myself. I always felt like I had to be asked because I was imposing on everybody. And I remember there was a girl named Debbie G out in Laurel. She's a really cool chick, and she asked me to go out. And I'll remember that till the day I die, how special it felt that somebody actually came up to me, you know, this person that I didn't think anybody knew, and asked me to go out. And that was really a cool experience. And I got clean in Central Maryland area, PG County. I was out there for about 6 years. And then I moved out to Montgomery area out in Germantown, and I've been out there for about 8 years. And it's really neat for me to come to the conventions and see people I knew from Central Maryland, or I go to the regional and I see people I knew, and now I've made friends with people in Tri-County, and I think it's awesome that such a small area put on this convention this year, and I think they deserve a hand. And And what I found from coming around for a while is I get to know people, and being involved in service, I get to know more and more people from different areas in our region. And I've had a really cool opportunity over the course of the several years I've been here to go to meetings and service-related functions in other places. I've been to Canada. I haven't been anywhere else, but I've been to Canada, and that was pretty cool. And but that was at this thing called the EDM. It was the European Delegates Meeting, and they had all these people from Europe and South America, and so I got to meet all these different people from there, and it just like broadened my vision of what NA is really like, you know. It was just awesome talking to a guy from London, England, and I'm in public information, and he's in public information. He told me what they did in PI out there. I was like, wow, that's really cool, you know. And talking to a guy from, I'm not quite sure where he was from, but it was like Saudi Arabia or Iran or something. He talked about how women did not go to their meetings. They weren't allowed to go to meetings with men. And they held their meetings in these bunkers in the ground, these old war bunkers. And they would have their NA meetings in these war bunkers in the, you know, that were dug in the ground. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is really wild. And I just find it's really cool to meet these people from all over the place and find out how NA works, where they're at. It ends up coming to basically the same, a bunch of people that did a lot of drugs got together and they're trying to, you know, get better, and that's really cool. But to try to envision myself there is like a mind-blowing experience for me. And oh my God, it's just so cool. I've had the opportunity to go to the last two world conventions, and that was really neat. And what the lady was talking about tonight, going to Hawaii and doing that meeting on the water, I saw myself there. And I've already decided I'm going to go to the World Convention in 2005. I got to go. And it was just listening to her made me, I'd already made up my mind to go there, but listening to her enforced the fact that I really am going to go. I have no idea if I'm going to be able to afford it. I'm not sure how I'm going to get there, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the plan and the vision is there. And then all I got to do now, I've got a while to implement that vision and get my butt on a plane and go. So, you know, I'm really, really excited about that. And that's a 180 degree turn from where I was when I first came in. When I was new and I was thinking about coming in here and oh, maybe I really need this thing and who knows. I thought it was going to be a death sentence for me to come into recovery and not have fun anymore getting high all the time. You know, I thought my life would be boring. I thought that, I heard that I was going to, I had people that had tried this thing, or at least experienced it, and told me how I was going to have to give up all my friends. And they were telling me how bad it was in here, and these people are lying about being clean, and, you know, and it was just, you know, a bad rap. Person was giving NA a bad rap, but you know they weren't staying clean, so whatever. But I was envisioning these people are gonna brainwash me and tell me to get rid of all my friends, and I had this horrible idea of what NA was gonna be like. And for me, how I got here was I had a counselor tell me that she thought I needed to go to them meetings, and I thought the lady was off her rocker. I didn't think that, you know, I asked her if she'd ever done drugs, and she never had. And I was like, you know, she don't know what she's talking about. And she's telling me I got to go to those meetings. But what happened was that she was putting me on the spot. I was in group therapy with all these other women, and she was telling me that, you know, oh, so-and-so's going to those meetings. Why don't you go? And, I ended up pulling this girl aside after the second time this lady did this to me. And I said, does this woman tells me about, you know, I should be going to NA meetings one more time. I feel like punching her. And my girlfriend says to me, oh, screw her. She says, let's go out to my car and catch a bus. And I was like a little disappointed. I said, well, wait a minute. I thought you were going to those some really good weed. Why don't you go out and, let's go get high. So we went out to her car, smoked a couple joints, and she starts telling me while we're getting high about those NA meetings, which is really bizarre, thinking about it now. So we're catching a buzz, and she starts telling me that the people in NA are really cool people. They've been where we've been, and they really care about people, and that I really probably should try going, at least just to check it out and shut this counselor up. And so just to shut this lady up, I decided I'd go to a meeting. And it was the wildest thing. I went in that meeting, and I didn't think I was going to, just stop using. But when I walked in and sat down, I immediately felt safe. All of a sudden, I felt calm. And I felt like I didn't have to run anymore. And I didn't have to lie. I didn't have to do nothing. I could just sit there and be at peace with whatever. Because for so long, I'd been battling using, not using. I'll get high today, but not tomorrow. And then tomorrow would come. And then, I'll get high today, but not tomorrow. And then tomorrow would come. And I was just, chasing my tail. And I stayed clean for about 2 months. And then I relapsed. And I picked up right where I left off 2 months before. And I told myself that I was going to get high from Christmas to New Year's because I didn't think I could ever stay clean over the holidays. Who does that? And I had to party on New Year's, but I would stop New Year's Day. Okay, I can do that. That's a good plan. Again, New Year's Day is my clean day. I get high for a week or two, and then I'd stop. And New Year's Day came. New Year's Day went. And I couldn't stop. And that thing y'all said about using against your will suddenly made sense to me. Before that, I was like, I could stop anytime I want. And there I was. My clean day came 13 days later. And during that 13 days, I continued to go to meetings, but I was getting high. Because I thought with this 2 months clean, I didn't want y'all knowing what I was doing, and you didn't really know, so whatever. But all the stuff, I'm getting high, but going to meetings, everything y'all said just kept haunting me every time I got high, using against your will, and I don't know what else, but, what was it, living, being clean and living dirty or something? But I knew I wasn't even living clean, but, I felt real dirty again. And for a long time I'd wanted to die, and during that short period of 2 months while I was in here, I didn't want to kill myself. And when I started using, all of a sudden I wanted to die again. And I was back in my living hell. And I knew now, because I'd had 2 months of recovery, what it was like to have peace of mind. And what it was like to feel good about myself for a change. And I was back in this hell of a relapse. And I was real fortunate it only lasted a short period of time. And I remember my last high, I smoked this bowl of weed in the parking lot at my job. I got wasted. But I was wanting to cry. And I couldn't cry. And I had this little teeny, meeny, little minuscule bit in the corner of the baggie. And I knew it wasn't going to get me high the next time. And I said to myself, well, just throw it out the window. It ain't nothing. It's a pinch. And I was like, you can't just throw that away. You can't just throw that little stupid, retarded amount of drugs away. And I said, fuck it. I guess I'll smoke it. And I smoked it. And I got rid of it. And it was gone. And the relief came over me. And I knew it was over. I knew I never wanted to get high again. And I was so grateful. I felt like the war was over. And I was finally surrendering. And I went to that first meeting that I'd gone to. And I got a service position. Because that's another thing I'd heard about. Service work. And I thought, y'all, we're a bunch of suckers for doing service work. Volunteering your time for what? I got better things to do than that. And I started taking them suggestions. I got a sponsor. I called that sponsor. She told me to do the first step, and I started doing that. And I began again, like I had in those first 2 months, to feel good about myself and know that I was actually on the road to recovery again. And that living hell I went through for a relapse, I keep it in my mind. I don't ever want to forget it. I've told people I wish I could put that pain and misery in a bottle, and when I'd ever think that I'm gonna, oh, maybe I can date that guy that does drugs, but I won't, you know? Maybe I can just go to that bar with my old friends, but I won't drink, you know? If I could just take that bottle of misery and take a swig and relive what I'd gone through before, you know, give myself a reality check that I don't want that pain anymore. And I feel really sorry when I meet people and they've been relapsing and maybe chronic relapsing, and I pray for them. I pray to God that they're going to like finally wake up and say they're sick of it, you know, that they're sick of the pain and the hell that they put themselves through. And I'm just grateful that I at one point in time became sick of it and decided to do something with my life. And what else? I went blank, and I don't know what else to say, and that's an awkward way to end a share, but I guess I'm sick of it, but I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad to be in recovery. I've been to maybe 9 or 10 of these conventions, and this is the second bonfire meeting I've been to. I'm a pyromaniac. I was so excited to find out it was happening. Last year was canceled, the year before I think it was canceled. And when this guy asked me to lead this meeting, I was like, does he know I'm a pyro? You know? And he didn't, but he knew that I would be a good candidate for this meeting. And when I was a kid, I used to rake leaves in my mom's yard, and she thought I liked to do work or something. No, I liked getting the leaves in a big pile and send them on fire. I set our yard on fire once, set a bush on fire, but, you know, that was a mistake. I wasn't really trying to. But I'm just grateful to be here. My voice is now, like, shot. But I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad y'all are here. I hope you're having a good time, and thanks for letting me share.
I'm a recovering addict from Pittsburgh, a grateful recovering addict from Pittsburgh. My name is Louise.
Hey, Louise.
Thank you, Ann, for sharing. First thing I want to do is thank the Chesapeake and Potomac region, and especially the Tri-County area, for such a wonderful celebration of recovery. A lot of people worked really hard and put their hearts and souls into this work, and I love so many of them. I'm fortunate to know some of them very personally, and I love them dearly. It's an honor to be asked to share at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting, but I felt the same way when they had originally thought of asking me to speak on recovery.com, because that's actually how I got to know somebody down here. And I don't know how they came up with me for the bonfire meeting, but they did, and I felt the same way Ann felt, man. I'm a pyro from way back, and the only thing I didn't do was I didn't kill animals, but I did just about everything else that kind of stereotypical mindset does, including the fire. I have two beautiful daughters who are now as big as me, 16 and 17 years old, and if I ever need to see my Creator, because I doubt often, all I have to do is look at them. But when they were about 4 and 5, I'm teaching them how to use matches. You know? And my parents and my sisters are freaking out because I'm teaching my kids how to use matches. But the way I looked at it is it's a power. And it can be abused or it can be respected and used. Drugs are a power that I abused. Ended up using me, nearly destroying me, destroyed a lot of people who loved me, their faith in me. I lost my freedom to this disease. I sold my soul for drugs. There was no fucking friends. There was no fucking fun. Every once in a while, when I'm in with some good friends, yeah, we might sit around and we might laugh about some of the crazy shit we did. But to be real about it, there's nothing glamorous to me about drug use. Nothing funny to me about drug use. My insanity, I know what I get when I pick up a drug. My insanity will tell me I don't care. I don't fucking care. I'll go out. I want to go out sometimes. I want to go out. This is too fucking painful sometimes. I feel so much, and at the same time, this disease is such a paradox for me, because I can feel so much, and yet feel like I want to put my hand in that fire in order to feel something. Help me feel something. Christ! And I'm so torn up inside half of the time. When I came into the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, I already had some time off drugs. I was locked up in a therapeutic community. I've been around this program before. I got clean I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. First time I got clean, I knew nothing about Narcotics Anonymous. All I knew was, first time, as soon as I woke up, I needed to use. Before I went to bed, I needed to use. And I used as much as I could in between, and I was still a teenager. I was so hurt inside, I fantasized about killing myself constantly. I was too chicken. All I knew was life was painful. People that I thought should have loved me or I wanted to love me, I got real confusing messages from. I love them dearly. I blame no one for my addiction. I thank God I'm an addict today. But I had confusion. The very first time I ever picked up a drug, one of my older sisters offered to, we were smoking cigarettes, we thought we were all cool, we were 11 years old, you know. And my sister asked us if we wanted to smoke a joint. I didn't even get a buzz. I felt nothing. I might as well have smoked tobacco. The second time she asked me if I wanted to get high, she had black hash that was laced with opium. And you better believe I fucking tripped. And I loved it. I loved it. And I chased it. I did a lot of stuff I'm not proud of. None of that stuff today I have to keep a secret or hide from. I will freely and gladly share any of my experience with any one of you if it will help me. And I'll tell you this, if it will help you, I mean. And I tell you this, I learned it helps me when I do that, because I carried so much shame inside because of the stuff I did, the way I felt. Fast forward, because we all can tell drug stories. Jails, institutions, dereliction, and death is the bottom line. Two times in our basic text, it talks about jails, institutions, and death. Once it talks about jails, institutions, dereliction, and death. And I always add the dereliction, because if I'm not in a jail and I'm not in an institution, I'm living the life of dereliction. And again, the insanity of my disease is that's the way I tell myself I want to live. I don't want anybody to love me. I don't want to love anybody. Fuck the world. And leave me alone. You know, that's the way I use. It got bad. It got worse. The last time I ever used a drug, I had no idea. It was the last time. To this day, I pray I ever got high. I was running from the law in Colorado, running from violations of felonies in Pennsylvania, thumbing my favorite mode of transportation back then, my only mode of transportation back then, and some guy picked me up. And just like the first time I ever used, he said to me, "You want to smoke a joint?" My drug of choice is speed, just for me. I need to say that. But that last, he said, "You want to smoke a joint?" I felt nothing again. The last time I got high, I felt nothing. The first time I got high, I felt nothing. No relief. No euphoria. I felt nothing. Drugs don't work for me. What I felt the second time, what I thought I felt every time in between that second time and the last time, I'd say today is an illusion. It's an illusion. This disease will make me think something is real and it's not. This disease can make me think of my view of the world and of myself in very unrealistic and distorted ways. What happened was after that guy dropped me off, not shortly after that, I got picked up. Like within an hour. I was in jail up in Eagle County, Colorado for about 12 days. Extradited back to Boulder County. And I was facing some serious time. Serious to me. More time than I'd ever done. I've done my share of bits in jails and in mental health institutions. None of them were fun. None of them were fun. But I was facing serious prison time. And my PO at that point stuck her neck out for me and got me into a 2-year therapeutic community. While I was waiting to go there, I was in jail in Boulder. My family had no idea where on earth I was, if I was alive or dead. I was running from the law, and I wasn't telling them where I was because they loved me, and they would have rather seen me alive in jail than on the street and maybe dying. I was dying, but maybe dead. And I debated. I was so sick. I was so sick, man. I was so sick. I was felt so alone. I was so scared. And all I wanted to do was die. Really, all I wanted to do was die. And I ended up calling home. This is so important for me to say. And I apologize for my family that's here from Pittsburgh, because I share this so often, but I need to hear that. I need to hear myself say this. I called home, and my little sister got on the phone and reamed me. I called home collect again, you know. My little sister reamed me up and down. I come from a big Italian family. And I found out that my father, who I love, man, I love my dad, had had a triple bypass. And that they had wanted to get a hold of me to tell me, and they didn't know how. They had no idea how to get a hold of me. My mother told me that in a very quiet voice after my sister got done reaming me. And that was the first time in my life up until that point that I had to own responsibility for my life. I had to own the fact that they couldn't get a hold of me because of the choices I made. I couldn't blame anybody. That was the beginning of my miracle. My heart was so sick. My heart was so broken. But it became open. My eyes became a little more open. When I walked into that therapeutic community, one of the counselors there was leaning against the counter. And I walked in with the clothes on my back, because again, that's how I live when I use. And he leaned against the counter and he said, snickered to somebody else, and he said, "I wonder how long she's going to last." And I remember looking up to him, because I hung my head. I constantly hung my head back then. But when he said, I got a defiant streak a mile long in me. I'm an angry person. And I remember looking up to him like, "You motherfucker." And he looked me right in the eye. Mickey Bacon. I'll never forget it as long as I live. He looked me dead in the eye with these blue eyes, as blue as the ocean. That sparkled. He was clean. Never in my life had I seen a clean addict until I looked up at him that day. That was my first drop of hope. Something was working for him. I have a magnet on my refrigerator today that I got here last year. It says that one drop of NA faith can turn into a lifetime of recovery. This past January, I celebrated 20 years clean. All right. Woo! And I'm going to tell you something. A lot of people have been talking about the history of Narcotics Anonymous, where and when I got clean. There was no NA. I cherish this program. I know how hard it was to get clean without it. I know how they used to treat junkies. I spent 20 months of my fucking life the way they used to treat junkies. I saw junkies gladly get shackled and hauled off to prison for a long time rather than get clean in a therapeutic community. This program works. One addict helping another, reaching out. The power of empathy. Of empathy. Not judging me. Not telling me what I need to do or what I'm doing wrong. You share with me what works for you. You share with me your experience. You share with me the mistakes you make. What you learned from them. That's the message I hear. And if I don't hear it, I keep coming till I hear it. I'm fortunate, though. Pittsburgh, we have a powerful area. Yeah. Yes, we do. We are blessed. I was talking to these guys, Tri-County area. I think they have this huge 100 square mile area. I think they have 29 meetings. 23, excuse me. Cindy was just sharing in the concepts. Pittsburgh area alone. Pittsburgh area. We have Pittsburgh inner city. We have northeast, southwest. We have all kinds of areas all around Pittsburgh and inner city. Pittsburgh area alone, we have close to 100 meetings a week. We are blessed. Not everybody has this. I take advantage of it. What I really need to say and share with you guys, my miracle happened. I hang on to this. I hang on to this. I'm not going to stand up here and pretend or tell you my life is easy, or it's been easy, or everything's fucking wonderful. Life is hard sometimes. Shit happens. People die. People we love get sick. We have to I used like I used for a reason. I say it all the time. When I get clean, I have to deal with those reasons, or I won't stay clean. I believe that for me. That's just for me. Fortunately, we have these 12 steps that save me on a daily basis. Today we have a wealth of literature that saves me on a daily basis, man. I love our literature. I'm going to end real quick. I have to just say a little story. Not really so much a story. One of the things that I've learned, and I'm learning again, you know, this disease for me is so much more than about the drugs I took and about the drugs I'll take tomorrow if I don't stay vigilant, or maybe tonight even. It's about so much more than that. You took my drugs, my miracle happened. The drugs were gone. When the drug goes and the addict works the program, amazing things happen. Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. That's the line in our text where this theme came from. When the drugs went, all the pain I'd hid, I stuffed, I ran from, I put so far over there I couldn't even find it for years clean, started coming back. These waves aren't nothing like the waves of feelings I started getting. You people carried me, and you continue to carry me. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to have a conversation with another human being. I had no idea how to do that. I was raised in a large family. There was a lot of fucked up shit going on, and I became a loner in a crowd. And I stayed that way in addiction, and I stayed that way for years in recovery. I came to meetings, man, thirsty. I listened hard to what you shared. But I couldn't share. I had a hard time sharing. Hard time sharing. I don't suggest this to anyone, but again, this is my story. Got a sponsor and began working some steps other than 1 and 2 and 3 on my own. I started working the steps. And in particular, she said to me, she looked at me, she said, Louise, you mean to tell me you've been clean for 5 years and you haven't worked any steps? I had a sponsor before that, but we didn't really work the steps. All she did was love me. She loved me. Her favorite word was wonderful. And she used to say everything was wonderful. She helped me learn to pray. She helped me learn it was okay to let someone hug me and love me. I needed 5 years of that. 3 actually, minus the 2 in therapeutic community from hell. at 5 years clean, which, believe me, was anything but that. Believe me. They termed our groups, it talks about it a little bit in Miracles Happen. Therapeutic community, confrontation, sensitivity groups. Yeah. Verbal street fight. That's how they termed it. It's a verbal street fight. They shoved my addiction down my throat. They shoved my consequences down my throat. I needed that too. But this wonderful sponsor who taught me how to work along with our home group at the time, steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 that carry me to this day, that I try to pass on to the women in my life. A miracle began to happen for me. I want to get back to what I said I was going to close with like fucking half hour ago. But after that, what I want to say too is when I hit like 8, 9 years clean, here's how I use this analogy all the time. I was out there, an addiction like broke my leg. My leg, my spirit was broken. And I came in, I got clean. I kept coming, and it was like my leg healed, but it wasn't set right, you know? And I had a real severe, like, limp. And at 6, 7, 8, 9 years clean, life, reality, I found I could only get so far with this leg in this condition. And either I was going to live like that the rest of my life, and I knew I couldn't. I knew I wouldn't and stay clean. Or we were going to have to go in, re-break that leg, and let it heal again. And at that period of my life, and I thank God for the meetings in Pittsburgh, in particular the Saturday 11:30 Teamsters meeting, for carrying me those years. I was a mess, but I was clean. Nobody knew what to do or say to me, but you told me to keep coming back. Keep coming back. And it was during this time that I really came to believe in a higher power of my own understanding. Curled up in a fetal position in my bed, wanting to die, with years clean, I found a loving and caring higher power that embraced me like you embraced me, but was greater than ourselves. I cannot deny the power I feel in meetings, but I can also not deny this power enables me to find a greater power that this addict needs to tap into. I need both. I'm sick, but I'm getting better. I'm a hell of a lot better than I was. And it's these steps that enable that. And I'm sorry, but here's where I'll get to where I was a half hour ago. I love you guys. You're my heroes. I said that long before 9/11. You are my fucking heroes. You are my heroes. The Cindys and the Brandys and the Chrissys and the Ambers. The John M's and the Steve P's. You guys carry me. You might not even know it, but you carry me. Either you carry me because I'm too weak, or you allow me to carry you and you strengthen me in that way. And we usually do that together anyway. During that period where I was so broken, clean, someone shared with me that I felt like such a weak link. I felt like I had no message to carry. And someone said to me, Louise, when we get in a circle, if there's a weak link, that means the rest of us have to be that much stronger and hold you tighter. You make us that much stronger. That helped me. But I share this with people, maybe too much. But I need to be reminded. And I also learned another lesson that goes along with this, and I'm relearning it again during this last couple months in my life and the period that I'm entering into. I put down the drugs. I become aware of all these other ways my addiction manifests itself in my life that are equally as destructive, equally as deadly, some of them. You know, in working the steps and doing an inventory and sharing, I become aware of ways I can act out, ways I hurt myself and others. In 5, and I admit it, I admit these things to myself, to another human being, to my God. Own them. And in 6, I realize that sometimes there's only so much I can do. There's only so much I can do. And that brings me to 7. I struggled with these steps. I struggled with God. Usually I can't even say that G word. And most of the times I don't. For some reason it's coming out real easy here on the beach. Please know when I say God, I respect whatever name or not name you choose to have for whatever power or not power you choose to have. But the process of 4, 5, 6, and 7 works like this for me. First, I don't even realize I'm acting out in a harmful way. I don't even know it. But then I become aware after I did it. Oh man, I did that. I acted like that again. Why did I do that? And I beat myself up mercilessly. I'm merciless on me. I'm pretty hard on you sometimes too, but I'm merciless on me. Then in continuing to come and in continuing to work these steps, in particular 6 and 7, I come to realize when I'm doing it, you know, it's like I'm getting closer and closer. I'm doing it, but I can't stop myself, you know? And then I get to a place where I know I'm going to do it. I know what the consequences are going to be, and I still do it anyway. That insanity. Then I get what I always call my window of grace that 7 gives me. The people who love me always tease me about. I get my window of grace where I know I'm going to do something. And I, for real, there's some things about me I'm as powerless to change as I am picking up. I could not stop using, not this addict. But I get this window of grace. And I turn left instead of turning right. A lot of my struggles and continued recovery, this process has revealed itself to me. Sometimes, though, I can use anything. I'm an addict. And sometimes I'll even use our beautiful spiritual principles as a cop-out. Sometimes it's not about me waiting for this miraculous window of grace I've experienced. Sometimes it's about me gritting my teeth and asking for help and saying, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to quit hurting myself. I don't know how to quit acting out in X, Y, Z number of ways. Letters, numbers. So I'll get so mixed up when I'm acting up. And I need to tell you I'm struggling. And I need to ask you, what do you do? And I need to start counting days since the last time I acted out. And I need to go to meetings and listen like a newcomer. I try to do that all the time, but apply it to whatever I'm struggling with at that time. So that's where I'm at lately. I'm starting to try to live with more faith and less self-reliance. Some of the ways I learned to cope aren't that cool. They aren't that cool. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God for our fellowship. I thank God for our fellowship. I thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. And in particular tonight, I'm very, very grateful for the Chesapeake and Potomac region in the Tri-County area for giving me this opportunity, for giving all of us to share in this miracle of recovery. Thank you for listening. Thank you.